We're absolutely sending it. This is the Paddock Party podcast. No preamble, no preparation. We're doing it raw.
We'll do it live.
It's gonna be bad.
Pushing live now. Let's go. Welcome, everyone.
Just go straight into live streaming. That'll go well.
Speedrunning getting banned on Twitch.
Smooth to kick. Okay, so, yeah, we've missed a couple of weeks. Been slacking, been ill, been away and otherwise. A couple of races done. Quite exciting. One race was Miami. We have to get our friend Kyle on sometime soon to do livery takes because Miami's famous for that. There's some amazing, beautiful looking cars. That AlphaTauri does look beautiful. Ferrari was a bit of a shambles, but we won't talk about that either. I have no idea what that red and blue and white was.
I mean, it's Ferrari awful. Being Ferrari this year, isn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of, did you guys just notice the white livery that they're coming out with for Monaco? The white race suits.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, there was some exciting stuff that happened in Miami, which we should just jump straight into because this is a 2-for-1 deal. Yeah. What was my highlight, your highlight, everyone's highlight was a papaya masterclass, would we say?
Easily.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, there's not really any other way to put it, is there?
Although, I don't know if I'd call it a papaya masterclass. Definitely Piastri gave us a masterclass. I think the highlight for me was definitely the contrast between him and Norris and the way they approached fighting with Max.
Mm.
Because, and I don't want to be accused of being a Norris hater, but he's just not doing it for me. I don't hate the guy. He's just not doing it, you know? Piastri was very patient. He put lots of pressure on Max, and he waited. And then when Max made a mistake, he struck. He took his chance. He struck. He got to the front, and he won the race. So starting P2 behind Max after Max got that amazing pole position, that amazing pole lap, tries to do the outside on Max. The two of them have been there before so many times. He tries it again and fails again. Like, the repetitive of that battle, that type of battle between those two, is almost getting boring. And then when he finally catches back up behind Max, long after Piastri's disappeared into the sunset, I think Lando's spent an extra 5 or 6 laps behind Max than Piastri. And he made like 3 or 4 attempts on Max, whereas Piastri just needed the one and, you know, overtook off track and had to give the place back. Like, Piastri just had it all. He was the perfect package for the weekend. He didn't get pole, but he did everything that he needed to do when he needed to do it. And yeah. Norris was just flailing around, as far as I'm concerned.
Max just let him through, right? Max knew that it was pointless. There's probably more risk in fighting that position than there was to do anything else. So Max, you could see it, just like, yeah, let it go.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
he does have the better pace. He'll take me in pit stops. Pointless to argue that one.
And he locked up completely when Piastri overtook him. Like, Piastri had the pace. He timed it perfectly. And he put so much pressure on Max that he tried to hold on to it. He tried to break too late, and it was done. Like you say, there wasn't much Max could do. He just pulled in behind Piastri, and Piastri disappeared in the sunset.
Yeah. Apart from that, I mean, you know, we're talking about a race that basically started, which Max has another pole at and loses out, and purely because of the tires over here. So again, race on race, tires basically are playing havoc there.
I mean, one of the big things to come out of the weekend was Red Bull totally not getting the FIA to do a formal inquiry onto the McLaren's tire cooling capabilities. And, you know, so there was obviously, I'm not going to say a lot of suspicion, Red Bull just doing Red Bull things, to be fair, in terms of throwing, you know, Zach Brown with his tire water bottle was a good highlight of the weekend for me.
Tire water, yeah. That was great.
So, you know, just a lot of not understanding how McLaren is doing it from the Red Bull side of things, and it makes it look a little funny, to be fair.
Yeah. Another highlight for me, mostly because of hearing all of the team radios and people talking about what happened around it all was how bad Ferrari's pit wall was for the Miami race.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the fact that they managed to get Hamilton that ticked off in the middle of the race is a testament to just how frustrating they must be to deal with. It just seems that they can't. They, when they're indecisive, it's to their own detriment. But then when they're decisive, it also seems to be to their own detriment. They can't seem to make the right choice at the right time. The Ferrari strategists or engineers or whoever may be making those decisions just, yeah, to do the opposite of what they think they should, and they might be okay.
Drives me nuts because, you know, after the race, I saw people posting, you know, transcripts of what the discussions were. And both Lewis and Leclerc were like, cool, let's swap. That's fine. No problem. And then their engineers just didn't talk to each other to do it, to time it properly. Like, that's their whole job, and they just didn't do it.
It's one of those things where this, where Ferrari seem like they just need somebody to hold the reins and just say, this is what's happening. Fred's kind of got, he's got quite a lot of character around there, but in terms of the internal politics of that organization, it's just always been kind of shambolic. Is the right word, I should say. Jean Todt was somebody that had an iron fist. And Ross Brawn, of course, pure masterclass. James Allison was good when he was there. These guys are good. Don't get me wrong, but it just feels disconnected.
I mean, when you compare it to other teams these days, it feels like Ferrari is still making the same kind of calls they did back in the day, whereas all these other teams seem to have, you know, moved on, moved up, made different decisions and stuff like that. And it's just painful watching Ferrari sometimes.
The clarity is not there. Yeah.
No,
agreed. The other highlight for me was, you know, the best race all season was the Lego race.
Definitely. Whoever came up with that idea, they deserve a raise because they straight up made the weekend. I have never seen any of those drivers look as happy as they did during that race. I mean, there's videos of Hamilton going around where he's cackling as, you know, George and Kimi crash into poor little Doohan and Gasly, you know.
Yeah, so, kids in a candy store, essentially, right? They can let their head down and do something which doesn't cost them everything that they're basically working towards. You know, you don't get to see that side of these guys, you know, these guys very often. Lo and behold, basically, you'll have the FIA come in and say, look, even with these races, there's overtaking rules, and you can't swear, and you can't laugh too long. It's a 30-second penalty for extra laughter. Right? That kind of stuff was just raw. That's what's beautiful about it.
One of the saddest things about the Lego race, though, was the meme that I saw posted after the weekend of a picture of Jack Doohan sitting in that Lego car and just the caption, this was the last full lap of this man's career. Lawson took him out turn 2 or 3, and then he was out of the seat.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. We will probably never see Jack Doohan in a Formula One car again, right?
No, I don't.
Which is really sad.
It's, yeah, as you said, enough spoken about Jack Doohan. And yeah, what were the other things that happened there? There was Alex Albon was amazing.
Yep.
Another P5.
Continuing to do his utmost best to carry Williams to a decent finish in the Constructors' Championship, which is always good to see.
Yeah. And of course, George. So George has been Mr. Consistent up until that point.
He's just there.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily hear that much about him, but he's just somehow there in third or fourth.
He's always just poddling around, doing his thing, you know.
It happens. There's always these sleepers that basically are just there, right? You would say, for the most part last season, Ferrari were just there, right? They were consistent appearers on the podium, winners of races when the opportunity presented itself. And that's kind of what it is. There's always like this team that's just there. Mercedes has been that team, you know. Reminds me a little bit of what's going to come. I feel like just before Lewis got there, there was that year where they were consistently there or thereabouts, but not really like doing stuff, just learning and observing and getting better. Feels like that.
Yeah.
I think it was start of last year or start of the year before. It might have been 2023. Ferrari had such a cracking start to the season that everyone was like, oh, it's on. And then, of course, they fell away and did Ferrari things. But yeah, like you say, they were just there.
Yep. I'm just thinking about what else was there for, that we can talk about that we had. Any other observations, James, Vince?
Off my head.
Yeah, that's all I really remember. And, you know, refreshing myself earlier with the highlights. I did like some of the stats that came out of the weekend. Again, not trying to sound like a Norris hater, but Piastri now has more wins than his F1 teammate, Lando Norris, with 82 fewer Grand Prix participations. His win rate of Grand Prix participated in is so much higher than Lando now. And granted, Lando's been driving for them for a long time through periods where McLaren weren't as good as they are. But if Oscar's accumulated that many wins, that has been at Norris's expense.
For sure. It definitely feels that way. I think a lot of the talk at the moment is that Lando seems to be his own worst enemy in terms of his mental performance on the track. And I think just, yeah, he was able to compete with Verstappen because, you know, Verstappen's the world champion. He's the big bad I've got to defeat. Whereas now that he's competing with Piastri, his own teammate, the guy who he's basically helped, you know, teach him the ropes, I guess, essentially being his first teammate. He's possibly realizing or feeling pretty inadequate at the moment.
Yeah. Look, I think I saw, you know, commentary on him actually basically saying he's off social media completely, just complete focus, things like that. You know, that's all well and good, but it's reminiscent of the effort that Rosberg had to go to be able to beat Hamilton, right? Just singular focus in order to be able to beat him. And I don't think that Oscar is at that level yet that requires this much focus. If you said it was Max, yeah, absolutely. But he's having to beat his teammate and he's struggling and his teammate's not Max. So anyways, that's just, you know, my two cents. It's just it's a balancing thing around Lando that we keep thinking about when we speak about this stuff. Amazing at that level to see how much the brain kind of impacts you in terms of performance around what all's going around. The other side of it is you have these guys like Steph Curry who, you know, there's rumors of him going into the locker room at halftime, doom scrolling on Twitter, just looking at what people have been saying and just fueling himself with that rage, right? Mm. And then he comes out and he has this massive third quarter and puts everyone to sleep with his effort. Just lights out kind of performance, right? Just personality, mentality, that sort of stuff is very different between those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely fair to say that although a lot of the stats we've talked about in the recent podcasts have all painted Norris in a bad light, we can't say that he's being absolutely thrashed by Piastri. Lando's always right there behind Piastri. It's always the 1-2 or the 2-3 or the 2-4 or whatever it is. It's not like Max and his teammates of Max disappearing down the road and his teammates always finishing 10th or 8th or something. So yeah, he's not completely dominating Lando. He's just been more consistent so far this year.
Yeah. Do we want to quickly wrap up that section and then look at what our predictions were for Miami and how horribly we got it right, wrong, incorrect, inconsistent?
Yeah, I definitely want to mention the other two stats that I found, which was Piastri is the first McLaren driver since 98 and only the fourth ever to win three races in a row for McLaren, which is kind of a crazy stat.
It is.
Because, you know, they've had lots of great drivers in that period of time, and to have not won more than two races in a row at any point during that time, other than people like Alain Prost and Senna and Mika Hakkinen, it's just pretty crazy. And Oscar now has the third most consecutive finishes ever. So when we're talking about consistency, that's another really cool stat to point towards that, that, yeah, sure, the calendar has more races on it than ever before, and that is contributing to that more than anything, but it does go to show that since the McLaren is a reliable car, Piastri's keeping it on the tarmac and keeping the car in one piece.
Super consistently, yeah. That fact basically just shows how much there's been domination between Ferrari, Red Bull, and Mercedes. And Red Bull again, right? In those periods. Since the time of Hakkinen, I think McLaren have had both Alonso and Hamilton there. Hamilton won a championship, pipping Massa at the last bit of that Brazilian track. But apart from that, they were all close seasons, very close seasons. You know, sneaking a few Brawn victories and a Kimi one. Apart from that, you know, domination essentially for large periods of time.
From all the other teams, yeah.
Just goes to show. I feel a little bit disconcerted for McLaren because the rules change. Is going to like destabilize again, so they don't get that big run again. But they have a good team, good everything. So, you know, like engineering staff all the way through to the drivers, management's great. So,
all they have to do is nail the new regs. How hard could it be?
Just stick some,
not that hard at all.
Get some carbon fiber, stick it on the car, get some fresh tires on, away they go. Don't worry about it.
They don't have to build the engines. They're just getting them from someone else. So, you know.
Easy mode, right?
Yeah. Unlike Red Bull and Aston, right? Jeez. Yeah. Any other stats there, Vince?
That was all I wrote.
Okay. All right. On to quick prediction review. Should we just close our eyes and start again?
Well, I mean, obviously, my prediction was actually reasonably close in some ways and way off in others. I had Leclerc down for pole position.
No. Nope.
No.
Not even close.
No.
Whereas you two had Norris for James and Piastri for Mark. You guys were definitely well and truly on the mark for that. But in terms of race result, I was kind of close. I had Max first, Piastri second, Russell third. So I had Russell in the right spot. Clearly not a Lando believer myself. Again, not trying to sound like a Lando hater. James, you had Lando, then Verstappen, then Piastri. So you're a little ways off.
Yeah, 2 out of 3, I bet.
And Mark, you had Lando, Piastri, and the very, very,
very brave very prediction.
Optimistic Hamilton.
I'm holding my heart help for Monica.
I was saying to James today,
all the
with
Ferrari
how
copium.
Tight. Yeah, with how tight qualifying has been the last few races and, you know, people like Williams and stuff like that getting way up there, there's a good chance that we have some people qualify out of position in Monaco and convert that.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Very. But we'll get there in a second. All right, so that brings us to Miami. We didn't do any predictions for the Emilia-Romagna.
Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix.
Yeah. So given that, we can skip a whole bunch, but we can get straight
I'm
into
gonna
it.
I'm going to predict Verstappen, Norris, Piastri. Look at that. I got it right.
Jeez.
Get out of here, James.
Yeah, I don't know where to begin over here, seeing as we've done this half season. But I think we should just look at what happened. Anything exciting, interesting, different? Crashes, no crashes in practice?
I mean, I feel like the big news, right, is that Doohan has been replaced in this race. Franco Colapinto is finally back in. All the Argentinian fans are finally happy.
Are they, though?
They're angry.
They're very angry.
Some of them.
For sure. But for context, for anyone who may not know, Doohan essentially had to have round-the-clock security in Miami because him and his family were getting death threats from Colapinto fans. So, yeah, fun times for everyone, you know? But Colapinto was in, Doohan is out. I believe also the Alpine team principal resigned due to some drama with his brother trying to hide assets for, I think it was the Mazepins, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yep. which is totally not sus when your brother is the head of an F1 team and the Mazepins want to get into F1. But, you know, and now we have the wonderful, and I'm sure you guys would agree with me, these sleazebag looking, what's his name? Something.
Flavio Briatore. Yeah, I don't know how that guy's back. It's just shambles. Flavio Briatore is banned, as far as I know. What the hell was he doing?
They undid his ban a few years back.
He challenged it in court and got it undone.
Like, the guy is I mean,
he cheated.
He's a businessman, and he's a well, yes, a lot of people cheat, but
he got caught. That's the difference.
Yeah, really caught.
Yeah, it's still kind of shit. I'm against it completely. I think he should be there, right?
So no, he shouldn't. But, you know, I try and be a little bit diplomatic when I say these things, you know.
Yeah. I just think it's just it's an absolute disgrace to let him back in.
It is. I mean, Formula One's never been the poster child of business integrity, you know, throughout the years. So it kind of tracks. It does feel dirty, but it is what it is. They'll let him do what they want him to do. So he's in, Doohan's out, Colapinto is in. I don't think very much happened in practice, really. I think the main thing I took away from it was that the Ferrari's brakes, for whatever reason, were not working properly. Both Hamilton and Leclerc were complaining of brake problems throughout practice. But outside of that, I think it was a pretty boring practice set of practice sessions.
Yeah, I think. The track has a lot of heavy braking, right? Like, there's one corner that's insane with the braking, so that explains it.
Exemplified by the fact that Alonso's brakes caught fire in the pit lane during the race.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an excuse, but it's just the fact that it is what it is.
It is a more challenging brake track, for sure.
The other call-out is basically that, you know, because Imola's not going to be potentially Nick on the track anymore, in the season calendar anymore, that was a big focal point. Amazing track, amazing driver's track. I've never raced it other than games.
It's definitely a good driver's track. I wouldn't say it's the best for racing. I mean, yeah, we did see a lot of overtakes this year, but I feel like that's not typical. Typical for Imola is a lot of DRS trains and stuff like that. I think there's just enough of a gap between a lot of the cars that there was a lot of overtaking.
Yeah, there was... The early pit stops, I think we're getting into the race, but yes, agreed. I think that's the case.
The tire compounds definitely played a big part in that as well, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Lots of uncertainty around the C6, right? So you could see that.
Yeah, well, I mean, from quali, we may as well go into quali, you know, the mediums were the tire to be on. Those softs were absolutely horrendous around the track. They were slower than the mediums. So I think it was the Aston Martins, I think, got themselves up into Q2 and Q3 on those mediums.
Alonso qualified fifth, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was so hopeful for him to get points.
Yeah, well, you know.
Finally.
We'll get into that in a minute.
I think the hardest thing through the quali was both the Ferraris failing to make it out of Q2.
Definitely a shock.
And yeah, like, they just hated this track for whatever reason. And Antonelli, who, you know, on one hand, he got the sprint pole last weekend. This weekend, he struggled horribly as well, the whole time, basically.
His home race, lots and lots of...
All of his classmates there with VIP passes. Real shame. Yeah, he didn't have a good weekend, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he had a quiet weekend, but I think he's still kind of figuring a lot of stuff out. For a young kid, consistency is not going to be there straight away. But yeah,
his achievements so far are definitely already great. You know, for a rookie, he's definitely doing
especially
a great job.
Like, a essentially what I'd call a top midfield car. Right, they're not challenging McLaren or Red Bull for wins. They're pretty much in the midfield. Kimi has been doing exceptionally well.
Yeah. Like Vince said, the call-out on, you know, getting sprint pole, right? That's not an easy thing to do. It's tight. Times are kind of shrinking up. Not a lot of race practice. Not a lot of practice in that circuit as well. Chuck it out there. So there you go. Yeah. continuing through quali, we're in quali now. Is there anything else? There was one bit of rumor that came out was, you know, I really don't know whether we should give it any airtime, but Christian Honor possibly being sacked, which would have been interesting. Yeah. Apart from that,
I was so hoping it was going to happen.
No, I don't think it was that way inclined. They'll wait for the 401st race before they do something like that. It was Red Bull's 400th race, I think, this season.
Well, not this season.
Not season, but forever.
400th race they've done, they've participated in.
Yeah. Yeah, Freudian slip. Looking into quali, the biggest shocker for me in quali was, it's not a shocker. It was a shocker, was Ferrari. Disappointment, big flop. Couldn't put either one of their cars into the Q3. Absolute shambles on that front. Amazing for, like, there were seven other teams that basically were in front of them. Seven different teams. And they couldn't get one car in there. That says a lot. Says a lot about their ability to qualify. I don't think their race pace is as bad overall. It's a little bit more consistent, but just being able to string one lap on.
Yeah, and I was just struggling to remember now. There was a bit of controversy in the qualifying sessions after Q1 with, I think it was Yuki's lap got deleted because he crossed the line just a fraction of a second late.
Behrmann's.
It was Behrmann's
lap.
Behrmann's lap
got deleted because of Yuki's red flag.
That's
Yuki,
right.
Yuki basically had the big off, right?
No, sorry, it wasn't Yuki's red flag. It was Cole Pinto's red flag. Yuki had the big off at the start of Q1, didn't make it through, and then Cole Pinto, continuing with form from last year, managed to smash the Alpine in Q2. I believe, I remember Behrmann's time was like 2 or 3 thousandths or 2 or 3 hundredths after the red flag had been waved. He crossed the line, so they deleted his lap time, which would have put him through to, I think it would have been close. It was close to getting him into Q3,
which is just so rough. Like, I really felt for him, and yeah. So it's, I think that was a bit controversial, and I think particularly as him completing that lap at that point was not putting anyone in any danger.
It was rules as written. He was perfectly fine. He was perfectly safe, but unfortunately, rules as written, the red flag was thrown before he crossed the line, and as soon as the red flag gets thrown, the session is nullified. I'm sure if they'd let that time slide, there would have been a bunch of protests from all the teams. Unfortunately, you got to do the rules.
Yeah, I said to Carly afterwards that they should just have a, 5-second allowance. If you cross the line within 5 seconds, it's like you're clearly you're already there. No one's going to be pushing extra hard in an unsafe way to get there.
Unless there was an incident
such an obscure
at the
thing,
start finish, right?
Yeah, 100%.
That's the problem. As soon as you, and you know what Formula One's like, as soon as you give the drivers and the teams an inch, they're going to take a mile. So I am disappointed in the ruling, but I understand the reason that it stands in the way they had to do it. It's not like it's a steward's investigation to see whether it was acceptable or not. It was just rules as written. That's it.
Yeah. Simple as. Look, I think there's no controversy there. That's just a bit of maybe. No, I don't think there was anything else to it. I mean,
and then you got the two Williams in 6th and 7th, which was a good result for them as well. For quali.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I think the Williams were amazing at that. Apart from Alonso, Lance Stroll also made it, and Isaac Hadjar, right? Like I was saying, A7 cars, you had an Alpine, a Racing Bull, and two Aston Martins, two Williams, one Mercedes, one Red Bull, and two McLarens in front of Ferrari. Like, shocking. Throw Kick Sauber in and, Haas, and, that'll be the end of the field. Everyone's in front of them. Yeah, qualifying was very interesting, I thought. Max basically looked like he was completely in control. Right through it, he just looked like as though he just had the car. But that was not the case on Friday. I don't know whether you guys watched all of Friday's practice, but you might have even caught it on highlights where Red where he was smashing the wheel and getting really upset and worked up with how frustrating the car was to drive.
Saw that clip, yeah.
They brought big upgrades to their car, to Red Bull. Big upgrades. And I think the biggest evidence of that is actually, skipping ahead a little bit, is Yuki and how he went about his entire race. Just, I mean, qualifying was tight, does max things and was amazing, except he didn't finish P1. That credit went to Oscar. On a driver's track, being able to pull something out like that, pretty amazing.
George qualified third, Norris qualified fourth. You asked where Norris finished?
I knew where he finished.
Good.
Yeah, it's hard to qualify here well, right? You got traffic coming at you everywhere. I think
it's a very narrow track, so it is very hard to get out of the way and stay off of that racing line.
Yeah. There's easy any number of mistakes that anybody else makes that causes you to lose time on that line. Yeah, Yuki basically had to start from pit lane. Pit lane starts these days are different, right? You actually have to go do the formation lap as well and then go back into the pits.
Get back into the pit lane, yep. They at least give you a little bit of time to warm up your tires.
Perfectly warm under those blankets.
But the problem is they have to release you and you have to sit at the end of the pit lane. So, like, I understand why they do it. It's probably more of a safety thing than anything. But yeah.
What were the other standouts in qualifying?
That was pretty much everything that I remember.
Yeah. I didn't, apart from Max not making pole position despite having control, barely anything in it between the two of them, Max and Oscar. I believe there was just, again, one of those things where it's just one corner. I haven't seen the ghost car shots for this race. That would have been quite exciting to have a look at and get an understanding of where it was at and how that little bit went through. Yeah. Did everybody else in the top 10 qualify on the mediums? I can't remember.
God.
Do you guys know?
I don't remember that.
Don't have it.
I know George was the first one that did it. So I believe George was the one that did it. So, and then there was a few others that followed suit as well, but George was it. He did say, though, that he thinks the soft would have been faster regardless.
Interesting.
Yeah,
you had Piastri and Verstappen were on the softs, and Norris, Russell, Alonso, and Stroll were all in the mediums. Everyone else was on the soft, actually. So it was just those three.
Yeah. So, yeah, no lap records or anything like that. So it was kind of, you know, interesting, but not apart from that. Moving on then, what happened in the race? I think this was James's favorite race of the season so far. He's got lots to say about how excited it was, the number of DRS trains that there were on track.
It was genuinely painful watching that race live and seeing the VSC and safety car just absolutely screw our boy Piastri. Each time it was called, it was like right as Verstappen had a pit window for it, and just painful to see. To be fair, the VSC also screwed over Lando. He had his pit stop the lap before that first VSC came out, but he still got his second pit stop under VSC, whereas Piastri had to take both of his under full racing conditions. So it was painful to watch that. Otherwise, I feel like he would have actually finished second instead of third. Sometimes that's just how the cookie crumbles. But I mean, outside of Verstappen, a lot of other people took really good advantage of it. I think the Ferraris got a lot of help from that, coming up from where they were to finish where they did. I also think Albon got an exceptionally good run of it with those safety cars.
I wouldn't say both the Ferraris got the luck. I'd say the person that got the least luck was probably the most unluckiest driver on the planet, the most unluckiest Formula One driver ever, Fernando Alonso. Hamilton absolutely got the benefit. Charles did not. He had the most interesting strategy of the lot because he started on the opposite tire to Hamilton, right? And he pitted probably one of the first ones. When I was watching the race and I watched it live, it was actually nice to actually have a race start at 10 p.m. where you could, or 10, whatever time it was, at a reasonable hour. He pitted and I thought, oh, geez, something happened there. Because it was like while George was battling early on, George was battling with Lando. And I'm like, what's going on here? Why can't, you know, George held Lando off for a good period of time. And then he's like, oh, tires are done. I'm looking at the timing monitor and I can see Charles dropped to like 17th or something like that. But that was enough for him to basically undercut George. When George went in, he was already behind. George came back out behind Charles in those like lap and a bit. Charles got a good bump. He was pushing forward significantly at that point, in my mind. Hamilton, on the other hand, stayed out and he's stuck behind Hajar. And we're talking about all of this before we talk about turn one. Right. Turn one was like, for me, wow.
It was too late. You've mentioned it. It was Max doing Max things, right? You look at the onboards from Piastri and Russell. Max had zero business putting his car where he did, and he managed to make it stick, do it cleanly, and, I mean, essentially, like, secure himself the win from that single move. It was a masterclass on the little bait and switch of, I'm not there, I'm not there. Hello, I'm here.
He was amazing. I think George also would have been able to take Piastri in that time. Piastri, for whatever reason, just looked like he was having a siesta. At the start,
I think Max played him really well. Max was far enough back, making Piastri think, I don't got anywhere to be. I don't need to push this. He's so far back, he's not going to dive around the outside of this corner. And Max just fucking sent it.
It wasn't a send. It was very, very. It was so calm, collected, and clean. He braked late. But he didn't feel like as though at any point in time it was out of control, right? It was just such a beautiful move.
It was a perfect, it really was like the perfect overtake into T1 there. Yeah. I mean, there you go. Everything said, it was amazing. It got him the win. You know, sometimes all it takes is one move.
I think it was so far the overtake of the season for me. And based on what I think, it could be the overtake of the season.
I mean, I still feel like Piastri taking Hamilton in turns 10 and 11 in Melbourne was still pretty damn ballsy.
Ballsy, yes. I'm not going to say no, but this one was for the lead, lap one.
For the win of the race, yeah.
For the win of the race. It's like you knew that Piastri was pushing that move, right? Yes, ballsy. Great move. This thing was like unpredictable. You don't get moves like this. You could watch it again and you'll probably never see anyone do that again, because people would expect somebody to do that now. It's gone, right? That move, not happening again. The number of overtakes we saw because of tire diff into turn one, none of them even remotely looked like that.
Yeah. There was a couple battles, I think, that were around the outside for sure. But it seemed that there was really no detriment to taking that outside line around that team.
Yeah. It was the unexpected nature of it. It was so spontaneous. It was a thing of beauty. I'm by no means a Max fan, but I love his racecraft. He is amazing. And that move there was, it was there. I'm taking it. And he took it clean. Yeah. Nobody else but him could have pulled that off, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, fanboy moment in some way, I feel like.
I was gonna say, get his dick out of your mouth, mate.
I was like, whoa. I had to watch that again. I don't even know how many times. I just watched the onboards. I've watched from George's point of view. It's just incredible.
Like you said, I think it was clear that he was just in complete control.
Yeah, he had a plan. He executed it perfectly. Piastri did exactly what Max probably expected and wanted him to do, and just sit on the inside and take that inside line. Yeah.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Apart from that, like, you know, I think it was lap 12, 11, something like that, that they started doing some early pit stops, the people that were decided to do two stoppers. And the undercut was on. The undercut was definitely on. As I said, George came out behind.
Not for Piastri.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite that strong.
Yeah, for some people it really worked. I mean, Leclerc got a massive undercut on George. I think it was on George. I think, yeah.
It was all traffic. Yeah, it was all traffic.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think it was as much timing as it was the undercut, because the whole grid is so much closer together now. There aren't these big gaps forming within the first few laps. Everyone was still together, so the people who pitted early, yes, they could undercut, but then they had to get through the traffic again, and it made it way less effective.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it definitely worked for the child because, like, he had the timing. Leclerc had the timing. And he had the gap, and he could pump out, like, quite a few laps. Like you said, the gaps were quite close, right, through the race. I think the only person that got lapped was Ollie Bearman before he got unlapped as well.
Yeah, so, I think so, because he was between Verstappen and Piastri.
Piastri had a bit of bad luck. I think they like went said, through that graining phase, right?
They pitted him way too early at the start, hoping for an undercut, but they just put him straight into traffic, and Verstappen just stayed out. And I don't know whether they were betting on a safety car of some description, but I think there was a pretty high chance of a safety car going on. And yeah, they got the safety car benefit, and that basically meant Piastri was never going to get first. And then same thing happened with the second safety car. Just the timing of it for Piastri was because he pitted so early in the first one, he had to pit early for his second stop. And that put him right in the middle of, you know, that gray area where you're like, well, do we bring him in for another pit stop and lose two or three positions, or do we keep him out and maybe lose those positions? Keep track position, but lose it after the restart. So, yeah, they really caught themselves between a rock and a hard place by bringing him in so early at the start of the race and then just getting unlucky with those safety cars.
There was a lot of unknowns around. I'm going to actually say that it was actually Ferrari's fault on this one because they caught George out, right? Mm. They caught George out, which causes a little bit of confusion. They knew the tires were going through a granny phase. What they didn't do was stick it out and basically hold track position on a track where you can't really overtake. Now, good learnings for the next race, but in this instance, it definitely caused a lot of chaos. But overall, like, it was quite exciting because the racing was close. I watched a lot of the toing and froing between Haja and Sainz and everyone that was in the midfield. And they were all basically on tire diff, which made it exciting in a lot of ways. But you could, some would say, thanks to the CC, you know, the uncertainty of the tire degradation, that there was a lot of just different strategies. Everyone wasn't pitting at the same time within the same windows. Gaps didn't get burnt down that quickly. And so, yeah, that was essentially the key to it all. You also had the likes of Norris still not able to make moves quickly when it came to getting past George, which spoke to both Norris again and George being able to hold down that position.
Yeah, it was a good defense. Definitely, I think the pace difference was just too much for him to hold out. But he put up a really, really smart defense and really made Norris work for it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my summary for the race was that at a lot of points, I was quite baffled because everyone was calling pit stops when I really didn't expect them to. Like, for the VSC and the SC, more people pitted than I expected both times because I had the back of my head that, you know, our track position is king here. Why are all of these people pitting? And then it was only later that I kind of thought about it and went, well, yeah, the undercut, not as strong as it should have been because everyone was all up close together and traffic was a problem. But also, yeah, that the tires were just throwing everyone off. And yeah, like, pitting twice onto hards actually made sense because of the SC timing and stuff like that sometimes. Whereas, you know, last year and before, pitting from mediums onto hards and then onto hards again would be ridiculous because you would expect the hards to do three quarters of the race distance, and it's just not how it unfolded this time.
Yeah, agreed. Ferrari had 12 positions made up in total. They were the biggest beneficiaries of those VSCs. And had Albon stuck the move, or I'm not sure what you guys think about Charles' sticking it out and pushing Albon out at that end of the race, which allowed Hamilton to get past Albon and therefore get into fourth ultimately. That was another highlight there that for me that was like
it was a bit rough, but I think Stewards came back and said no incident there. So, you know, rough racing, but
it wasn't. I think it was fairly fine. People will have strong opinions about this. You know, Williams finishing P5 and P8, another P, it could have been a P4 technically. Hamilton actually had his best finish. I'm just thinking about what else. Like, you know, the biggest winner, obviously, being Max. I don't think anybody could have beaten him, whether they were on the same tire strategy, same tires. Like, if even if the pit stops were taking place together, I don't think it would have happened. It would have had any impact on anyone.
Yeah.
That Red Bull upgrade, whatever it was, has made a huge difference. And it's smooth sailing for them now. That's my two cents.
I
hope not.
Well, I don't think it'll be like no competition, but look at Tsunoda. That's my point, right? He started from pit lane, made his way all the way into the points.
Yes, but, you know, swings and roundabouts, Imola is a different track to Monaco, is a different track to, you know, Silverstone and et cetera, et cetera. So they may be good at Imola, where it's a notoriously hard to overtake and hard to follow circuit. Yeah, we'll see how things go. They're definitely on the up, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see how well things are going.
Yeah. If, for instance, here's something interesting. Could Hamilton have had a podium if there were a couple more laps?
Their race pace was really strong, but he would have had to take it off Oscar,
who had 29 lap.
Very old tires.
But
definitely possible.
He was complaining. He was like, what are we doing here? Why are we still behind this safety car?
It took a long time for that safety car to come in. It was quite frustrating.
Sure did.
Yeah. So I think that the outcome would have been a little bit different anyways. It would have pushed Oscar much further down if there were a few more laps racing rather than the number that they were. That was my observation. I think they finished up like 2 seconds between each other, Hamilton and Oscar, at the end of the race. What else was there from that? I mean, I don't know. There was a stack of overtakes just purely because of the tire difference. Red Bull's 400th race and their, I don't know, 127th victory or something like that. Significant.
Definitely. Sauber's 600th race?
Yes.
I didn't really pick up any other stats other than that I had the time to go and actually check. But I'm sure there's more that came out of the weekend.
I believe it was Alonso's highest start since China last year, where he started third.
That's pretty rough.
Qualified third. That is rough, isn't it? But yeah, poor guy. I'm hoping he can pull off a victory someday soon.
You never know. Next year, maybe Newey will have designed a rocket ship again.
One will hope. Be good to have another period of domination by Newey.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We have a couple interesting points from the weekend.
Go on.
Apparently, Carlos Sainz has out-qualified Lewis Hamilton for the fourth time in a row in that Imola qualifying, which I find hilarious, personally. Sainz manages to get kicked out of Ferrari just as Williams comes up there. I think the reason the VSC might have taken a little bit longer the first time around with Ocon's car is there is footage of his on board. The car tried to eat one of the marshals. He got his foot stuck under the front left tire as they were wheeling it back into the side. Didn't hurt himself, just slowly as it was coming down the hill. I hate to say it, but the streak continues. There is still only 5 drivers who haven't scored any points this year. It's 4 rookies and Alonso. Even after qualifying 5th, the man still can't get any points.
Unluckiest fucking Formula One driver.
It is really painful. Sad stat loss I think we have is that Oscar lost his 100% pole to win conversion rate as well.
Yep. Also, Russell's lowest finished, I think.
He was the biggest disappointment for me.
Yeah, he just... Normally, he does nothing, gets P3. This time, he just did nothing and got nothing. I mean, he still got points, but, you know.
Be sad.
Yeah. But a little bit of juicy news that I found in the last couple of hours. Apparently, Ofnar Zafnauer is going to start campaigning for the 12th F1 team soon. Apparently, he has secured an engine and funding for a 12th F1 team. So we'll see where this goes.
Really?
Said it with all of the Andretti stuff. I'll believe it when they line up on the grid.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I won't believe it until they're actually there, but it's still interesting that we might see a 24-car grid soon. We're going to see a 22 car grid next year, but seeing a 24 car grid would be great.
In a long time.
Especially after watching the Formula One 75th anniversary 24-hour live stream that they did, where they showed a few of the old races from, like, I think it was Canada 2000 and something, the one where Jenson Button had 6 pit stops and still won the race.
Yeah, beautiful race.
Yeah, seeing how many cars were in those races was, yeah, it was very nostalgic.
Yeah, those cars were tiny as well. Yeah. That's why it's so much easier to race around these types of circuits with tinier cars. Now these big boats basically take so much of track.
Yeah.
They're getting smaller.
I was watching some of them. Well, not small enough. I was watching some of them. They'd be full wide, right? And there's still space around on the track. Now you put two cars on these tracks and it's like, where are you going? It's just, yeah. It's interesting. Times change, cars change, complaints will stay the same.
Yeah, that's definitely true. People have been complaining about the competitiveness of Formula One for 40 years, and they will continue to do so.
Absolutely. Yeah, so big changes to the driver's position. George is not anywhere in contention anymore, I think. You've got Max catching up and closing in on people. Lando's basically still struggling along. He's holding down P2, but not by much anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, and finally, like, to see Leclerc and Hamilton basically starting to put some points on the board was good. We'll see what happens in the next few races. So we got back to backs coming up as well, I believe, right? Back to back to back.
Triple header.
I hope it stays this close.
Monaco. What's the one after that?
I did just have it up. Yeah, Monaco.
Barcelona.
Spain.
Wait, is it Barcelona or are they doing that street circuit idea again?
No,
Barcelona. No, the street circuit is next year, I think.
Okay, yep.
A weird looking Madrid track.
We do have we've got Monaco and then Spain and then Canada's 2 weeks, 2 week break.
I love Canada. Love Canada. Good races coming up. That's what I'll say. All good races. All right. So shall we start to change focus on looking forward? Getting predictions, getting insight into the mind that is James and Vince and myself of what we think is going to happen in the Principality of Monaco.
So I'll let you guys go first. I'll be generous.
So generous. Look, I'm going to say...
Wait, who's taking notes on this part, by the way?
I got it.
I was going to say Vince can if he's going last. I'm going to say Verstappen for pole.
Naturally.
I mean, Verstappen is always quick at Monaco. The lap he did, was it last year or the year before?
It was last year.
He made like 0.4 in the last sector alone because he was down by 0.2. The man just pulled off the most disgusting P1. So I think he can pull it out. I'm going to say... For race results, I am still going to hope for a Piastri P1, hopefully pip him in T1 or in the pit stops, but then I'm going to say Piastri, Verstappen, Norris. It's going to be my
tool.
Going vanilla AF.
I'll go next, if you like, Mark. I'm going to put Verstappen pole as well, just because I think it's so inescapable, I'll say. But then I'm also going to be hopeful and say Piastri, Russell, Hamilton.
Russell, Hamilton.
I'm banking on collisions or a completely failed pit stop or something like that, just throwing everything, you know, into chaos.
Yeah. Look, I hear you guys. I really do. I'm going to go completely different on this poll.
Shock horror. Claire?
No.
He's going to go for Hamilton again.
George Russell.
Ooh.
Interesting.
It's only because...
It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
It's all vibes here, buddy. It's all vibes here. I got nothing but vibes. And so we'll go with vibes. So I think it'll be a Russell Paul. I think he has... It's that close. I feel like it's just a matter of putting a lap together. He has the ability to do it. We've seen these Mercedes cars sit on pole before in sprint in the hands of Antonelli. George has not been far off Paul a couple of times already this season. So, on that note, Russell.
I mean, to be fair, though, Russell does have a propensity to smash into walls in high-pressure situations.
Stop being a naysayer here, James. Nope. Stop being a naysayer.
He went for the gap at Singapore, James. He went for the gap and he hit it very hard.
Yes, yeah. The words that said gap on the wall.
Singapore. Yeah.
Singapore.
Jeez.
Is he going to keep the pole, Mark? That's the question.
If you're putting your faith in him, you better fucking put your faith in him.
I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be fine. Like, I've been thinking about this. I spent a fair bit. Like, sure, nothing wrong with these vanilla plain Jane kind of, you know. Hang on, I haven't given you my 1-2-3s here yet, but I've gone with these plain Jane, vanilla, Russell, Piastri, Norris nonsense. But I think I'm very sure of my prediction. I'm as sure as you can be considering all these other things, right? The Stappen's a clear, like, yeah, okay, no problem. He's probably got this based on how he's been racing everywhere else. The car's a little bit different. Yes, it's more suited. It's got bigger operating window. And we've seen last year that wasn't the car that went on to pole. There was the year before that it did. Last year was all Charles. I was very tempted to think about it that way, but I think George has got this. Now, when it comes to the race, we have mandatory two stops. Now, God alone knows what the hell that means. It could just mean it's like two
stops. I forgot about that stupid fucking rule.
It could be two stops that basically everyone stops at the same time, right? No one's throwing any weird, wonderful strategies at play, right? Like, what are the gaps going to look like? I have not simulated this, right? Can you get a big enough gap where, hey, guess what? The other guys come out. It's not ever going to be like that. I hope that it works, but is a bigger chance of failing. But I think
slightly
there'll be some
chaos. More hopeful about my race result prediction now. It's actually possible because there'll be two pit stops, more chance for everything to go completely batshit.
Yeah, it's because it's Monaco that you could have some batshit stuff. And all it takes is one hit on the wall, and you got Colapinto and Bartoletto.
He hasn't done anything this season yet, so he's due for
I don't think that car can go fast enough to hit a wall.
I don't know, man. He was going pretty fucking slow around Monaco in the rain, and he hit like four walls. So
you said rain. Bingle juice basically comes into play, and anything can happen.
Calling rain bingle juice.
So
take that.
I will actually say that I think that it won't just be Russell that's an upset pole position. I think the qualifying is going to be very interesting, and you'll see quite a few different names pop there. I think it'll be a Russell, and these two kind of like toss up in my head, right? Because it's Max and Piastri I'm tossing up over there. So I think it'll be a Verstappen win, because I think he will be very close, right? And I think he will win because he is just that goddamn good with a Piastri second, and just because I'm that way inclined, I will not put Leclerc in there. I will not put Leclerc because he has a propensity, if he's not in the front of this race, to crash. He's probably one of those guys that will smash the car into bits and not finish because he didn't win. He's not going to win. He's not going to finish either. I will say Hamilton.
Wow. So he's putting George in pole, but he's not putting him on the podium.
Fourth.
No, mate.
Vibes, buddy, it's vibes, but vibes on that poor thing.
We need punishments for shitty predictions, I think.
All right, James, I'll buy you lunch.
All right.
I'll buy you lunch if there's chaos. I'll buy you lunch if Russell is nowhere near the front, and if he is up the front, we will call it quits.
Define nowhere near. Is that up to Stewart's interpretation, or is that...
No, let's just be very clear.
I'll be the umpire.
Right, you can be the umpire. Right. I'm happy to buy you lunch. It's fine. I'm pretty sure that he's going to be up the front. I have confidence in this prediction. I think he's due, and he's all that.
F1's a cruel sport, man. Even if he's due, doesn't mean he go and get it.
He had his down race, buddy.
Alonso's due a fucking point, and he's still got that taken away from him, all right?
Alonso could be due a lot of things. He's absolutely the worst fucking driver.
He's due a retirement, too. Yeah, but like all the memes are saying, we're probably going to be seeing him race Lily Verstappen, or I think there was a post saying like Kimi Raikkonen's son is doing well in go-karting, so maybe we'll see him in Formula One in a few years.
racing against Grandpa Alonso.
Hey, be nice to Alonso. I never used Grandpa to like Ludlow. Him. Now I realize how much he loves the sport, and I can't fault him for 1 second.
I mean, he's doing it for a hobby, right? Just like Kimi.
Kimi Raikkonen was. Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. They come in, and that's where there's pure joy. All right, so you got my predictions. Let's see how bad we go. Like, if Russell's not in the top three, and I'm saying this is like just basically kind of like in qualifying, don't worry about the race, who gives a shit? If he's not top three, then I owe you a lunch. Okay, James? Let's lock it in.
Done.
Right, and I'm not saying...
If he's in the top three, I'll owe you a lunch.
No, don't worry about owing me a lunch.
No, it's got to be steaks on both sides. Got to be steaks on both sides.
All right, fine. Steaks it is then. Vince, you're welcome to come and eat by yourself. Join us. That was like your lunch, though.
If Russell comes P10, so exactly in the middle, I'll buy you guys lunch.
Safe bet lunch.
And we just quickly get on Instagram, message George, slide into his DMs, get him to throw the race or throw the quali.
Throw the quali. That's all. Everything's in the quali, so we'll see what happens. We'll know everything soon. Okay, other news? Other interesting tidbits?
I mean, outside of the Zaffnauer thing, this week's been pretty quiet.
Yeah. Special liveries. Let's see what comes up. Hey, did you guys see the Disney thing, by the way? Before I forget, Disney. Some sort of announcement happening with Formula One.
I saw something. I didn't see what it was about, though.
Me neither. I saw it, and I'm like, I was wondering if you guys had any ideas. They're doing a Cars reboot. No, that's Pixar. Was it?
Pixar is Disney.
Okay, well, then yeah, possibly. Cars reboot.
God, can you imagine?
Formula One themed cars reboot. That'd be funny.
We'll find out. Yeah. Check us out.
Oh, James.
No, that's you, Vince. You're the announcer guy with the good voice.
Good microphone as well.
Oh, no. Well, thank you for hanging out with us on the Paddock podcast after a couple of weeks off being ill and whatnot. Miami and Imola were both fascinating races, not all-time greats, but super entertaining, and I think we had a good time talking about it today. And yeah, fingers crossed that Monaco qualifying is crazy and the order gets shuffled, and then the race is equally crazy and there's failed pit stops and bingle juice everywhere, and it's a good time.
Everybody loves bingle juice.
All right. Thank you, gents. We'll catch you all on the other side.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I've stopped recording.